Good afternoon or evening, everyone, wherever you might be, whatever time zone. As we share this virtual space together on this retreat. So, wanted to offer some reflections this afternoon that I hope would be supportive to your practice. So, first, I hope the sound is okay. Yes. Okay, great. Thank you for the thumbs up. So, just to say about the format, this is very interesting to give a Dharma talk in this format, a full length. We'll see how full length is going to end up being. But in this format, it's the first time, as I mentioned, the first day, a couple of days ago. Seems like it was a month ago we started. That is the first time I'm teaching a retreat. I've given day-longs before, but there's something different about a retreat. We always consider a retreat, a residential retreat, to go in more deeply. And I'm noticing the same thing here. There is a depth that has been developing, and it's evident in the practice meetings, that there is a sense of deepening and dropping in that I'm also noticing in my own sitting with you. So, with that, the sense of offering a talk to drop it into the space is actually quite a privilege. It feels really special. So having said that, the talk today is on the theme of perspectives and attitudes or views. There are different ways we can refer to them, and each word really has slightly different connotation. But I'll stick to perspectives. So my talk today has two parts. So in the first part, my intention is to speak about how important our perspectives actually are, how fundamentally important it is. And in the second part of the talk, after we've hopefully bought into perspectives are very significant, then it would be more practical. Okay, if we agree that perspectives, different perspectives, can make a difference between freedom and suffering, so how do we go about cultivating different perspectives? So it's more practical nuts and bolts. And you might already have signed up and said, yep, I agree that perspectives are important. And yet I want to really bring us along even more to appreciate how fundamental, really the beginning perspectives or views are really at the very beginning. It's when you start. So right view, beginning being at the beginning of the Eightfold Path, it's important that views, perspectives are fundamentally important. So I'll spend the first part of the talk about perspectives on perspective. So that we all have the same perspective on the importance of perspectives. So, as we've been exploring together, we already have a sense that our perspectives, our attitudes, have fundamental impact on our experience of life. And more fundamentally, how we create our own reality. And the few examples I want to give at the first part of the talk, part one, it The examples range from perhaps the mundane and mundane not in a derogatory way, but in the way of being in the world, in terms of our achieving in the world, being, living, working, profession, to the supramundane, as it's called in some of the suttas, in liberation, in the way of seeing our lives, in the way of seeing our humanity, in the way of seeing our purpose, seeing ourselves, seeing this mystery that is this being that is us. So perspectives are important all along that the spectrum, along the axis. So to start with some examples of where perspectives have been researched and have shown up in daily life, one work that comes to mind is the work of Carol Dweck, a psychologist who has come up with the idea of the growth mindset. And I wonder if many of you might have heard of it. I wonder if I can see some nods. Yeah, I already see some nods, people who've heard of the growth mindset. So what is the idea of the growth mindset? So according to Dweck, mindset is a self-perception or self-theory. Self-perception, see that word? Self-perception or self-theory that people hold about themselves. So believing that you are either intelligent or unintelligent is a simple example of a mindset. And people may also have a mindset which is related to their personal or professional lives. So I'm a good teacher, I'm a bad parent. So having a self-perception, I'm a good person, I'm a bad person, I'm a good teacher, Dharma teacher, whatever. So, and people can often be unaware. They might be aware, but they could actually be unaware of their mindset, is something that her research has shown. But whether or not they're aware of it, their mindset can have profound effect on their learning achievement, on their skill acquisition, on their personal relationships, on their professional success, and many dimensions of life. Just this perception that they have of themselves. So that how it would work is her work, her educational work, especially centers on the distinction between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. So in a fixed mindset, according to Dweck, people believe that their basic qualities, like their intelligence, their talent, are simply fixed traits. So they end up spending time documenting their intelligence or talent instead of developing them. And they also believe that talent alone creates success without effort. So Dweck, in her research, she suggests that students who have adopted a fixed mindset, they believe that they're either smart or dumb, and there is no way to change this. For example, may learn less than they could, or they learn at a slower rate, while also they shy away from challenges. So because they believe that their poor performance might confirm that they can't learn if they believe that they're dumb, or that it could indicate that they're less intelligent than they think if they thought they were smart. So in fact, they actually end up learning less because they have this mindset. So this particular fixed mindset, in fact, holds them back from trying, from learning, from excelling. Do you see how that works? Yeah. So her findings also suggest that when a student with a fixed mindset fails at something, as they inevitably will, they tend to tell themselves that they can't or won't be able to do it. The examples are, I just can't learn algebra. Or they make excuses to rationalize the failure. I would have passed the test had I had more time to study. So getting a sense of how having this mindset, having this belief about yourself as a fixed mindset, as a fixed perspective, can really make a difference on how much actually you try to learn. And it determines not just the way you are in the world, your successes, worldly successes, your relationships. You know, if I'm a bad parent, well, I won't even try to do well, or I will go put myself into opportunities that might challenge that because I'm a bad parent, and you'll make excuses. So whereas people with a growth mindset, they have a sense that it's changeable. It's fluid. It's changeable. It's not fixed, what has been exhibited is just the behavior, and they will try harder, work harder, learn. So it can really have profoundly different outcomes. So I wanted to offer this because of this matter of perspective, what perspectives we take. And if this is something you're interested in, curious about, please look up her work. There are plenty of videos, not during the retreat, please. After the retreat, look up Carol Dweck, Growth Mindset. She has videos and various interesting, and a book on the growth mindset and research out there that you can really get a better sense of in these very measurable, especially in education, how the different perspectives that we take about ourselves can really show up in the ways that things could be different. So the perspective that we take can make a significant difference in the interpretation of events in life, the perspectives that we take. For example, if we have comparing mind, and the comparing mind arises, we can suffer a lot from comparing ourselves to either others or to an ideal which we think we should achieve that we are not achieving. And this can happen on retreats. It can happen in our sitting practice. Your ideal might be a yogi who would be sitting, walking every single sit, and will be perfectly still and perfectly concentrated, and by noon the first day would get into the fourth jhana, and then the other fourth jhana, the eighth jhanas by the second day. And there's kind of a comparing mind, or you see other people sitting really fixed. So that the mindset that seeing the perception, seeing the perspective, seeing the comparison that is happening either to other people or to an ideal self can create a perception, a perspective of greed, a mind that is greedy, a greedy mind, which is actually the perfect segue to the invitation to always check to see what is the mind that is practicing. How is the mind that is practicing? This is actually an invitation by the teacher Utejaniya, Burmese master, who always asks, what is the mind that's practicing? Is it the greedy mind that's practicing, that's sitting on the cushion? Are you taking the same greed mind that wants this, wants that, wants good things? Do you practice with the same mind that sits on a cushion and wants the goodies, wants the spiritual goodies, wants. So it's actually, it's a greedy mind that's practicing. Or is it an aversive mind that is practiced? Is it the perspective of aversion that is practicing? It's like, dukkha again. Oh, here we go. I don't want to sit with dukkha. Oh gosh. Okay. What can I do to distract myself? Can I, sounds. Oh, okay. Those are pretty cool. So the aversive mind, don't just pushing away. Or is it the confused mind, the delusional mind, which is just kind of doesn't quite grok, doesn't quite stabilize. It's just kind of like la-di-da, la-di-da, la-di-da. Greed, hatred, and delusion, the three poisonous roots, the three unwholesome roots. More friendly translation. To really examine, to know what is the perception, what is the mind that is practicing. So speaking of perspectives, the importance of perspectives, I still want to keep myself in the first part of the talk, not get too practical just yet, even though I just was practical and suggested that you examine the kind of mind that is practicing. But coming back to another thing I wanted to share is that perspectives in some wild and fundamental way, we make our own reality as humans. We make our own reality. And in many ways, it is conditioned. It is conditioned by our culture, our zeitgeist, the era that we live in. It's conditioned by our family, our upbringing, all the experiences that we've had in our lives. And for us to see that there is a conditionality to the perspectives that we take, what we see as attractive or unattractive. So one example is if you, for example, see drawings of the Western masters of hundreds of years ago, you mostly see that the ideals of beauty were very different. For women especially, large, rotund. And then as time has gone by, you see the perception in the time of Twiggy, women very thin and the models getting thinner and thinner. And in the West, the perception of what's considered attractive or beautiful have completely changed. In a fundamental way. So if you were raised in the time of the Renaissance, your perception, the perspective you would take for what would be considered beautiful, the paragon of beauty, physical beauty, would be very different from what perhaps you would take on if you're a teenage girl being raised in the West, in the U.S. right now. It would be very different perception. Your perspective would be affected by the zeitgeist, by the culture. Our perspective is also affected, not just by all of these, conditioned by all of these, but even more fundamentally conditioned by evolution. So we are... Every single one of us, we are the product of the successful genes that were passed down through centuries. And the genes that were not successful did not get passed down. So, for example, in the savannah, when our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers and mothers were out hunting and gathering, if they missed a berry, there would be another berry. They would live long enough to see another day to get another berry. Their stomachs would, you know, gurgle and make noise, but they would live. But if they missed a danger signal, they wouldn't live another day, right? They would be eaten by the woolly mammoth. So guess who sent down, passed down their genes? The ones who were really, really alert to all the dangers, all the negativity on the savannah, this, the slightest sound of feet, you know. So we have a negativity bias. Every single one of us has a negativity bias. We're much more tuned to negativity in our environment than the good. You notice something, you have a wonderful, pleasant feeling, unless you're really in wonderful states of practice with sukha and PT, well, sukha especially, really landing in that. Otherwise, notice if a friend gives you a compliment. If you accept it, you may not even accept it and say, oh, no, thank you. You know, a friend might say, oh, what nice green eyeshadow you're wearing. And you might say, oh, no, it's not eyeshadow. It's just, you know, whatever. It's the reflection of the video. You may not take it, but if you actually took it, you would forget it the next 5 minutes. But if they said, oh, that's really terrible eyeshadow you're wearing, then you'll remember it for days and days, right? It's a silly example, of course, for a variety of reasons, see above. But the point is, we're much more sensitive to negativity. Of course we are. We're much more sensitive to negativity than the good, than what is nourishing, wholesome, good, happy. So part of our perspective is also evolutionarily conditioned. It's not your fault. You're not damaged. This came in this package. But what is important is to know all of these, to know that perspectives, first of all, matter so much, and that there are lots of different perspectives possible. So another thing I want to say in this first part of the talk also is that as we create our own reality, fundamentally, we create our own reality, or rather that our reality is preconditioned, and we have choice in shifting and conditioning it to be different. Maybe that's a better way to say it. So our perspectives are preconditioned, and we have choice in cultivating them to be different. I'll say that again, because I think that's really the crux of it, to recognize that our perspectives are preconditioned. So we don't judge ourselves. We don't self-flagellate. We can have compassion and care about how we habitually respond in a way that may or may not be helpful. If we have, say, a fixed mindset, oh, maybe this is the way I was raised. Okay, it's preconditioned. And to know that there is the power of cultivation, we can cultivate a different mindset, a different perspective, a different view, which is why we practice, which is why we're here. Fundamentally, we can say that practice is about cultivating a different perception, a different way of seeing, a different way of seeing reality. And tying into the talk, the first, the opening talk, that a particular way of seeing can lead us to suffering or freedom. And again, invoking Rob Berbea in his book, Seeing That Freeze, and his beautiful work, Seeing That Freeze, there's a particular way of seeing that brings freedom. There's a way of seeing, which tends to be the way you're usually conditioned, that brings suffering. And along the same lines, as I mentioned earlier, the vipalasas, the distortions of view, the distortions of perception, which have to do with the three marks of existence. In this way, in this context, we can think of them as three ways of seeing, internally and externally, reality, the three ways of seeing, the three frameworks. And one framework, the first one, anicca, impermanence, or nicca, permanence. So again, evolutionarily, culturally, we're conditioned to have the perspective of permanence, wanting things to be the same. And one perspective that we train ourselves in this practice is to open up to the perspective, oh, it is all impermanent. Of course it comes and goes. It is inconstant. Of course, aging. Of course, this body, the way it functions, just us being in this world, it's impermanent. Our loved ones, people whom we care about and love, of course, all of it, things that we want, our jobs, our livelihoods, income, money, you know, everything. It just, there is a sense of inconstancy, not to come to expect the sense of permanence, to hold it a little more lightly. It's amazing that things seem as constant as they actually are, that things don't go wrong in our world more often than they do. That's actually what gives me a lot of amazement. And it is said that when we try to hold on to what's inconstant and impermanent, we get a rope burn, because we're trying to hold on so hard, with both hands, we get a rope burn. So opening the hands, holding lightly, not to say you don't enjoy, not to say you don't love your loved ones, you don't enjoy your youth, your health, the financial well-being, the order in the world, or whatever, safety, whatever it might be. You enjoy it, and you don't expect it to always be the same way. Of course, everything will change. It becomes lighter, easier to work with change, because it is the fundamental rule. It is the perspective. And taking that in can be unsettling, but again, titration, little by little by little, from the personal to the universal. You don't try to open up to the universal impermanence all at once and try to really push your nose in it. Okay, she says it's impermanence. All right, bring it on. No, please don't do that either. Just little by little by little, start with the impermanences in your life that you are facing, you are grieving, and open with little by little to those. And if there can be space for that, space with that, it can open up more and more to the universal, to see the universality of change. But start with the personal. Know that it's along the same lines. The second way of seeing, lens of seeing, through dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, suffering, often translated as, it's part of life. You can't expect that you do everything right, you go to the right school, you get the right job, you marry the right person. Okay, you get the right children. Perfect. All set. Done. It doesn't work that way. Of course it doesn't work that way. Perfect body. Won't get sick. It doesn't work that way. Because of the impermanence, and the rope burn, there is the dukkha and the suffering that arises. And it's part of life. It is part of life. So to examine the perspective of not expecting satisfaction forever and what cannot give us forever satisfaction. Again, not to say to not enjoy. Please enjoy a sunny day on the beach. Please enjoy the sukha of life where it happens, but hold it lightly, as holding the striker lightly, holding it lightly, not grabbing, holding it lightly, enjoying. It's a lovely striker. And holding it lightly. And the third perspective of impersonality, the distortion of view, would be to make it all personal. It's all me. It's under my control. I have the wrong perspectives. I think the wrong thoughts. I keep falling asleep during meditation. It's my fault. I'm bad. I'm bad. I'm bad. I'm a bad meditator. You remember that from the beginning of the talk, the mindset, the fixed mindset and the growth mindset? So there's a particular mindset, particular view of, oh, it's all me and it's all fixed and it's under my control. Whereas anatta, the conditionality, it's all conditioned. It's all causes and conditions. Yes, we have responsibility because we can cultivate the conditions for something different when we realize, when we have awareness. And to realize that, oh, there's so many causes and conditions that it's way beyond our control. They were set in motion generations ago with our great, 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 great grandparents. So to see the impersonality, that this is a process, the uncontrollability, the ungovernability, that also brings less suffering. So this aspect, just the three marks, can be a whole talk in and of itself, but I think I would just touch into it and leave it as that, the vipalasas. And so coming back really to the top level of perspectives, having more wholesome perspectives, these perspectives that I mentioned, for example, any of these doors, going through any of these doors of anicca, impermanence, inconstancy, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, or anatta, impersonality, not self. Going through any of these doors of perception can open up to a lot more ease and freedom in time. And it can also open up to a lot of jigglings of perception, like loosenings of the perceptions that we usually have, to a lot more ease, into spaces of beauty and grace and love, in the midst of challenge. And challenges won't go away. There could still be lack of well-being in the body, and there can be beauty and grace and well-being that holds the lack of well-being. There can be pain, but there can be beauty and well-being that holds the suffering. It can, the whole dynamic, the whole perspective can shift to be one that is surprising, unexpected, and not in the normal perspective. The whole logos, the whole framework can shift and change to allow for grace and freedom and beauty and lightness to hold in the midst of the emptiness, in the midst of impersonality. And of course, emptiness really captures all the three ways of looking that I mentioned. So, perspectives are important. What perspective we hold, whether we consider the worldly in education and success and relationships and family, what kind of perspective we have, but ourselves, others, and the world. And all the way through awakening, the supramundane ways of seeing perspectives, it's actually not different. It's along the same, as I was saying, it's from the personal to the universal. It's from the personal to the universal. You don't, you know, remember, as a new practitioner, I wanted to kind of see the fundamental truths, and I wanted to see reality and penetrate reality and, you know, jhanas. And then what actually really happened, I realized that the teachings, as you notice, are very personal. The Buddha doesn't posit about what's out there. It's really personal. It's really personal about what you see and what is helpful in not suffering. And yet, as we practice with the personal, with the very personal nature of our lives, whatever gift we've been given, whether it's chronic illness, whether it's loss of loved ones, whether it's fear, whether it's trauma, whether it's financial situations, whether it's whole range, whatever personally we've been given, family trauma, whatever is our unique gift. And I put the gift in quotes because we don't see them as gifts. This is this terrible thing, curse I've been given. But it's actually the gift that will open you up. You get to see all your perspectives through that and work through it and grow through it from the personal to the universal. There is no other way. You can't just bypass into the universal. Oh, yeah, I'm liberated, open. It doesn't quite work that way. It will come back to haunt you if you don't actually go through step by step by step in through the personal. So what I also want to share in this first part of the talk is the second part of the first part. Oh yeah, I forgot to say. So there are two parts of the talk, part one, part two, and then there's A, B. So here's the B part of, this is 1A. So the 1A that I want to share. So 1A was, this is one. 1A was perspectives are important. In every aspect of our human experience. Freedom, of course, the fundamental one. And the way we see the world, the reality we create. So that's 1A. 1B, the point I want to make in less time, 1B is that perspectives are malleable. Perspectives are not fixed. I think you already know that. I trust and I believe, but I'll just say a couple of words about it. One is, I appreciate one of my favorite books, which I just reached out, A Man's Search, it's getting with the green because it has a lot of white. Anyway, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I'll keep moving it and maybe you can see it. One of my favorite books written by Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor. Read this 30 years ago, very touching. And so many aspects of the book have stayed with me. And I want to share one paragraph with you. And he says, "We who lived in concentration camps can remember others giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." So we have a choice, and we have a choice to condition our perspective that we take. It may not happen overnight. Sometimes it might, but it tends not to happen overnight, but we have a choice to condition it. And I want to say more about it in a moment, but hold on to that on a post-it note of your mind. The other thing I want to bring in about perspectives being malleable, at any point, it is possible to take a different perspective. And I trust, as Diana was also inviting you to examine in your experience, many of you have had the experience of your perspective shifting and seeing something very differently. It could have been an insight on a retreat, or it could have been maybe you went for a walk in nature and, your head got cleared, and you start to see the situation differently. Or a common one in terms of a perspective being malleable. Maybe you had, at some point, a big crush on someone. And then months later or years later, you're like, huh? What was I thinking? Really? And your perspective completely shifted. Is this still the same person? But the sparkle that was around them is now gone. So shifts in perspectives are malleable. I appreciated Diana talking about the bio, with different bios that one writes for different audiences. Who's the person, the real bio? And it reminded me of something that I read in one of my favorite books. In Milan Kundera, the Czech writer, Czech author, his book called Identity, which deals with this. And one question he asked was the identities that you have. Here you can say perspectives. So you have, many people have their work identities. You know, they're like, don't mess with me, and they're very efficient. And, you know, they have the identity they have when they're with their family, maybe. Especially, it could be a young identity, or identity when they have when they're their partners, different identities, or when they go to a particular setting, when they go to IMC, IRC, whatever it might be, right? Different identities, like we put them on in cloaks. And it's interesting to consider, what if you got stuck in one identity, in one perspective? So you couldn't shed your work identity no matter where you went. That's the way you always showed up with your family, with your loved ones, when you're relaxing, when you're on retreat. So you can already see by that, you take on these perspectives, these ways that you show up in a very malleable way all the time. Another thing I wanted to bring in is something that I really appreciated reading in Tony Bernhardt's book, How to Be Sick, years ago. And I had been actually homebound and bedbound with Lyme at the time. And I remember there was a passage in her book that really struck me, because she had dealt with being homebound and bedbound too. And she had this passage about the different perspectives. So, something like this, that, okay, here's a woman lying in a bed. That's what's happening, right? That's the stimulus. That's the fact. There's a woman lying in bed, okay? Oh, but there could be so many different narratives externally and internally. Oh, this woman is sleeping in. She's had an exhausting few days working so hard, and she's just relishing the fact that she's in bed. Just so internally, there's a sense of joy and delight. So a person from the outside doesn't know, right? So the state of mind inside could be one of joy, or the person could be having chronic illness and haven't got out of bed and is really miserable and misses their friends. But so it's just a woman lying in a bed. But the narrative can be so different. So internally, we can have a different narrative. We can have a different perspective. So here we are. It's someone being at home for a couple of months. So that can bring up a sense of loneliness. Like, oh, I miss being out with my friends and going to restaurants and places. And yet the internal dialogue, internal narrative could be, you know, we can imagine, solitude, finally. Just I'm away from the hubbub and the busyness and the craziness. Finally, some time to myself, to this dear being whom I love. I can finally spend some quality time with me. You know, I've had to deal with, let's say you're a teacher, these 50 screaming kids all year long, and now I really get time to myself. Finally, this person that I forsake all the time, I really get to know her and spend time with her. So, and the two different narratives, perspectives, can really make a difference in suffering, feeling lonely, or enjoying the solitude. It's the same thing. It's a man, a woman, a person, I should say, a person at home. It's a person at home, right? But so many different internal narratives. So lots of different perspectives. So now I want to shift to the second part, which is shorter than the first part, especially because I brought in a lot of the second part already in the first part. Okay, now we're entering the second part, part two, no intermission. So part two. So what I want to now bring up a little more is about actionability. Okay, so perspectives are important. Okay, I've signed on, Nikki, okay, and Diana, okay, now what? So first is, I suggest, know that there are other views, know that there are other perspectives. Expose yourself, as just as you are, to other perspectives. And in terms of the Dharma, it's the perspective of these other perspectives of the three characteristics, you know, reading Dharma books, listening to Dharma talks. You're doing it already right now. To expose yourself to ways, to perspectives that could be more helpful. And in general, speaking with wise friends. So exposing yourself to more helpful, to other perspectives, reading books, listening to talks in general. So exposing yourself to different ways of seeing the world, seeing reality, seeing different perceptions, so that you get jiggled out of this being fixed, the fixed view. And also gently questioning your perspectives, just very gently, like when a perspective or a thought comes up very strongly, maybe ever so gently dropping in, really? Is that so? Oh, really? Is that so? And it doesn't have to be, is that so? It can just be very gentle, very, is that so? With a lot of humor, like, come on, as if a friend was joking with you. Come on, really, is that so? To question, to jiggle your assumptions. The second thing we've been emphasizing on this retreat over and over again is to become aware of what your perspective is. What is my perspective? And by the way, this first one and the second one, exposing yourself to other views can lay the groundwork for knowing your own, or knowing your own can lay the groundwork for being exposed to others. So they can. There's no order to these two. But the awareness is fundamental. It's very important. Know thyself. Know thyself. How do you relate? What is your perspective? And just to say, knowing your perspective, knowing your view, knowing the way you think, are you relating, isn't always good news. Can be shocking. Like, wow, really? This is how I think about it. So-and-so, or this. And have compassion for yourself when you see. So the point really here is to turn your awareness onto itself, on the way you're relating. How are you relating? What is your perspective? How are you holding? And the idea is that we're all fish in water. We are all fish in water. We just want to know, we're all fish in colored water. We just want to know what the color of the water is. There's always going to be water. You're always going to have some perspective. It's hard not to have any at all framework. Even if it's a very loose and relaxed held, but at least know what it is, really get to know it. Know thyself through awareness, through this practice. Get to see with kindness, with curiosity, with gentleness. Don't berate yourself if you see something you don't like. Be very kind as you do this investigation through awareness. And then you can cultivate other perspectives. So, and there are a couple of ways to go about this cultivation. So one way can happen is when you actually settle, when the mind does settle into spaciousness, into more samadhi, concentration, more spaciousness. And you don't even have to call it concentration samadhi, but just more stability. Let's call it stability, more spaciousness. And someone was reporting actually in one of the practice meetings today that this is what's arising for them. That as the mind is settling, there is a sense of stability, a sense of sweetness that can arise, that when the perspective is arising, the thoughts are arising, then the relationship to them automatically shifts. They're not so held so tightly anymore. It just automatically kind of gets jiggled on its own. It's the beauty, it's the grace of the settledness that permeates the perspective. It kind of gets jiggled a little bit on its own. So that's one reason why we sit and we walk and we sit and we walk. Through the grace of that, it can happen on its own. That's one way, not the only way. That's like a little birdie of grace that sits on your shoulder sometimes. You can't shoot it down and say, come, sit. It just kind of like when you set the conditions, for it to happen. And sometimes it happens. And there are other ways. Actually, similar to what I was saying in terms of the stability, for example, when the example I was giving earlier in terms of being homebound and during this COVID-19, I found myself when I listen to the news too much and the pain of the world and my heart breaks, there is a sadness, there's an unsettledness. That there is so much unsettledness that I can't be supportive to myself and others. And that's the time that what I found is to turn inward, to turn away, not to negate it. I'll come back to it when I can, when I have more stability, but turn around, turn inward, turn and meet myself, turn my gaze inward. Body, breath, thoughts, emotions, and really be with them gently. And there's a sense of stability that arises from turning inwards, your sense of happiness. I become happy when I'm just on my own with myself. The sense of solitude, which is beautiful and delicious. I relish the solitude, and the stability arises. That then I can be more available for myself and others. And a different perspective takes hold instead of a perspective of being unstable. A couple of other things I wanted to mention, as we've already mentioned, but I want to really emphasize. So the practice of metta, loving kindness, is the supreme way of conditioning your perspective. It conditions your perspective towards kindness, towards yourself, kindness towards others, and not just the relationality of kindness, but there's a dimension of metta. There's a dimension of friendliness that it's above and beyond the relationality. It opens your mind and heart to the grace and beauty and the unfathomability, the unexpression, the ways that you can't even wrap your mind around the beauty of love through your being and in the universe. So it's from the personal to the universal. It conditions you, it preconditions you, preconditions your perspective in ways you may not have expected. Your heart opening up to universal compassion, exultant, unbounded, when you least expect it. Another practice that can also really help changing your condition, your perspective, to condition your perspective, is the practice of equanimity. The formal practice as you sit and practice, may I accept the goings and comings of things, and also the wisdom perspective of the bird's eye view, as if you were sitting on top of a mountain and seeing the comings and goings. If you were sitting on the top of the mountain and you just saw the whole world, there's a sense of spaciousness, 360 view, the bird's eye view. Ah, when you're in nature, also that supports this loosening, this conditioning, and a sense of equanimity arises, similar to doing the practice of equanimity. So, yeah, so perspectives are important. Perspectives are a dime a dozen. Choose your own. Know what your perspectives are. Know thyself. Know your mind. Get to know it. Take the time to know what your perspectives are, even if it doesn't seem like good news. Expose yourself to more wholesome perspectives. And know that you can cultivate. You can cultivate the conditions for different perspectives to arise on their own through sitting, turning inward, quieting, settling the mind, with wisdom practices, that is, with metta, with equanimity practice, etc., etc. Let's just sit for a minute. May the perspective of ease, love, and freedom, grace and beauty arise for all of us unfathomably. And for all beings everywhere. Thank you.